Thank you. I appreciate you coming out and being with us this morning. The study that I'm going to present is an ongoing study entitled Perinatal Mental Health in a Post-Katrina New Orleans, and it's preliminary data that is part of an overall larger study, Models of Prenatal Care and Health Indicators in a Disaster Recovery Area. And the study is a collaborative effort between colleagues at Tulane University, also others at the LSU Health Science Center, and Loyola School of Nursing. The background for this study is, of course, Hurricane Katrina. This is now, we've gone through the sixth anniversary of Katrina. The entire Gulf Coast was devastated. However, the New Orleans experience was a little unique and different in that the levee breaks was what caused widespread massive flooding in the whole area, with 80% of the whole city flooded, which then displaced about 1 million people. So part of this research is about the return of those people and return of some of the most vulnerable population and that are still recovering and still going through the long-term effects. Of course, we know mental health is one of the primary health issues that people go through who are impacted by disaster. Post-traumatic stress disorder and depression prevalence levels always go up with impact of the disaster. And what we don't know so much about, we know the symptoms usually wane over time, that people do recover. Majority of people do recover after disaster, but there's always a small amount that do not, who have symptoms that do not go away. So what is kind of unknown about is what are those, who are vulnerable people that maintain these high levels of post-traumatic stress and depression. And also when the recovery is prolonged, as has happened at Katrina. You didn't have a one-year, two-year recovery. You have people still 6 years out, still trying to recover. And that's what this study was sort of trying, we're trying to focus on. We do know researchers in the past have looked at this, and Norris and others have given us four criteria that they have discovered that really you can sort of look at as red flags that do put a community at risk. And here we are 6 years out, and I think you can look at these and note that Hurricane Katrina actually meets the criteria for each four of these. We did have extreme property damage, ongoing financial problems, and you can say disaster caused by human intent. We call it a natural disaster, but the people in New Orleans, the flooding happened because of a break in the levees that were supposed to protect them, federal levees. So therefore, there was this look of negligence, that they weren't well cared for as part of what caused this disaster. Also, it was a high trauma impact, and you had a lot of people fearful for their lives for a long period of time. It wasn't just a short event, and for some people, they didn't get out of New Orleans for 3, 4, 5 days after the disaster, or if they were trapped in their attic on top of the roof, they didn't know someone was ever going to come rescue them. So a lot of people had a lot more traumatic experiences associated with this disaster. With our study, we're interested primarily in women, and we know that women are always at increased risk for post-traumatic stress disorder and depression following disasters. Multiple researchers have validated that women tend to have higher levels and for longer periods of time. And don't really know all the reasons for this. We know that probably women are more sensitive to the loss of resources, which happen after disasters, the loss of the home, the meaning of home to women, and being the caregivers and the people who maintain the culture of the home, the culture of the community. And also we know immediately following disasters, there are all kind of unique issues to women that can cause more stress. And just altering their life and their childbearing routine and all the risks related to that. Another issue related to women in disasters, however, is that is pretty steady is the mental health issues. One of the areas that has been studied is during the disaster year, women who are pregnant, are they more at risk for preterm birth or low birth weight babies? And a lot of these studies were done right after the World Trade Center disaster, and they're in the literature. They're interesting to look at, and my colleague, Dr. Harville, has actually done a really good synthesis of the literature, if you want to look at one article and overview the whole body of literature. And what it really came out with is that it's inconclusive. Some studies did show some small smaller for gestational age babies, and some did not. And even there was even one that showed a weight gain of babies following the World Trade Center disaster. So it's a wide spectrum of knowledge out there. But what that literature did also validate, as well as some more studies that have been done post-Katrina, is that mental health issues do remain one of the primary health concerns and issues. Both Dr. Harville, my colleague, and Dr. Savage and I both did some depression measures in 06, right after Katrina, with the women who were still in the New Orleans area. And we still found 15 to 30% of the women had some degree of depression, which is above the population level. So in planning the study, we were very concerned with what now, what with the long-term recovery, especially as women who were living other places, their whole lives were disrupted, and now they may come back to New Orleans to live, and coming back to New Orleans meant coming back into a more stressful environment. With the recovery, people are coming home. We have 78% right now of the pre-Katrina population has returned to New Orleans, and 68% of African American population has returned. And we've had some new populations come in, like we had a rise in 57% more Hispanics. But coming back to this, community, however, was not always easy, especially for the people who were homeowners before. And this is a night picture, so you can't see too clearly. I should have chosen the day one, I guess. But you can see the gentleman sitting in his home in the middle, between two other homes. His lights on, his yard is well groomed, his house is completely repaired. On both sides of him, however, are two totally devastated homes. So I think this is a good picture, sort of a metaphor of what people had to do who wanted to come back. They had to have a lot of will and then be able to face a lot of obstacles. And if you could imagine living in a neighborhood like this, coming back the first one or even the second one or the third one, when there's still a lot of homes still devastated around you. So that's part of the stress of now coming back. However, you have to think about the people who came back in that home also. It wasn't always the entire family that came back. It might have been older members of the family that came back, the younger stayed where they were, or the vice versa. You have younger people come back and the parents not come back. And I hear that all the time as I'm interviewing these women. They'll tell me that mama is still in Atlanta or their mother is still in Houston. So the whole family did not come back, so it isn't the same. And even if they come back and rebuild, the neighborhood is not the same. The social networks are not there. Maybe the churches are not there. So there's been a total loss of the whole family fabric. And this is just a good list of what women would be facing if they come back to live today, as well as if they came back in 06, 07, 08, 09. Though it's a moving target as to what are the key stressors that they may face, and they change somewhat. For example, on the list, lack of medical care providers. There's been a lot of community clinics that have risen up, which is good, but not all those community clinics offered OBGYN services or well women visits, and not too many offered OB services. So that has varied. And lack of daycare was a major problem for people who came back with children. Because you have to understand, for the community to rebuild from the roots up, the owner of the daycare had to be able to come back, had to be able to rebuild their home where they lived and their family, and then on top of that, replace their business, rebuild their business, get loans and whatever they needed to do to rebuild their business. Retail stores, we went from, in 06, 07, the big issue was like pharmacies, not having to wait, you know, in line, you know, to get your prescriptions refilled. And now retail stores are, those have kind of come back, but what we still are dealing with is getting like grocery stores. And especially the more devastated areas, the chain grocers were slow to come back and rebuild in those areas. And I guess the biggest issue in coming back to live in a post-Katrina area was that everyone is stressed. Everyone's rebuilding. You may go to your OB, but your OB doc may be stressed over what's happening with his rebuilding effort. So everyone is, it's just a whole atmosphere of somewhat stressful. So we can add to this list is if a woman comes back to live in this area and then she gets pregnant. So she's going to start her life, you know, her family or another child in the family on top of all this. So this is where we were in looking at starting the study in 2010 to see what was happening with the women that were coming back, the childbearing women in particular. So what I'm going to discuss today, the aim of this aspect of the study was to describe the effect of stress reduction, coping strategies, social support, their disaster exposure and disaster recovery, what all those, the effect of all those may have on their depression, anxiety, stress levels of pregnant women in this long-term disaster recovery. We used a social ecological theory of health promotion to guide the study. We wanted to know what were the personal factors that they were going to bring with them that might be strengths or weaknesses. We wanted to know about the environmental factors, a little bit about the history of their disaster experience and their recovery experience, as well as where they're living and what kind of neighborhood that they're living in. And also, if they were pregnant, we wanted to know about their prenatal care, though I'm not going to be reporting that much on that aspect of it today. Health and illness, then we wanted to look at and measure some key outcomes. And these are some of the instruments that were used for the different areas of personal attributes and environmental. And you'll note on the environmental side, I have the oil spill recovery. We were 2 months into doing the study when the BP oil spill happened. So it's like we don't get through one disaster and there's another. So we added some oil spill recovery questions to at least get their perspective on that. These are the health outcomes that I'm going to be reporting on today. Using the Edinburgh Postnatal Depression Index to measure depression. Pregnancy-related anxiety is a tool that picks up what do they worry about when they're pregnant. And perceived stress is a more of a long-term stress scale. And then post-traumatic stress disorder to get a key of look at their risk for post-traumatic stress. Obviously, knowing that these screening tools do not diagnose these conditions, however, they do give us some glimpse into the risk that people have for depression and post-traumatic stress. The study design was cross-sectional. It was a one-time sit-down interview and to go through the instruments with them face-to-face. We did the interviews sometime between the women being 24 to 40 weeks gestation. We wanted them enrolled in prenatal care because we're interested in how that might be impacting their mental status. Of course, they needed to be currently living in the Greater New Orleans area. They could be Spanish or English speaking. And we called this the gumbo study in the community as to get people's attention, and when they call in, they know they're registering for the gumbo study, growing up moms and babes. And we use a number of private, but mostly public, clinic sites to recruit women and Healthy Start as well. And this story gives you a glimpse of what the women look like, what the demographics are. 70% of our study so far, the women are black or African American. 58% have incomes less than $15,000 a year. 72% are not married, never married, but 38% do live with a partner. The bright side is on the educational level. If you add those numbers up, 72% have at least a GED or high school or higher education. However, only 30% are employed. And not on the screen, but just to let you know, most of the women, parity-wise, we had about half the women are having their first baby, but then the other half are having two, they're already on their second or third child. So we had a good range of parity. Just to give you an idea of the frequency, just of these two indicators, since those are two primary indicators, depression and post-traumatic stress. And using the Edinburgh, we used a score of greater than 12 to indicate likely depressed. And we had 35% of the women scoring greater than 12 on that instrument, which is well above the population level of 10 to 15%. And even with other studies going up close to this, looking at African-American women and lower economic status, going up to 28.3%. So we're still at a high level for prevalence. 56% being likely at risk for depression, having a score of greater than 8. With post-traumatic stress disorder, we're kind of staying within the population, general population level, but we still had 11% of the women indicating having a score greater than 50 on that instrument, which would indicate likely post-traumatic stress disorder. And just to let you know, we are capturing the women who did have the Katrina experience. This is the women who we asked them about their experience. 37% feared for their life during the storm at some point. 13% were injured. 19% had some family member injured. 28% walked through floodwaters. 62% had much or enormous damage to their home. 53% told us that their house flooded. So these were people directly impacted. 10% saw the death of someone close. 21% saw someone die. I think key at the last figure, 35%, the day we interviewed, said their life was still somewhat or very disrupted. They had the option of being largely back to normal or completely back to normal. And occasionally you'll have someone who is largely back to normal. We almost never see someone who'll say they're completely back to normal. So 35% of the women still are consider themselves disrupted. We did some regression measures for association of those events, the hurricane experience, and then does that put them at greater risk for depression or post-traumatic stress or pregnancy anxiety? And you kind of look through, it's a lot of numbers, but you can kind of see that with depression and anxiety, there's a 1 to 2-fold increase if they had any of these events happen to them. I think the key ones to look at is, however, is post-traumatic stress. If you look at the items that are 3-fold increase is being injured during the event, having someone in your household injured during the event, puts you at greater risk, much greater risk for post-traumatic stress. And continuing with the other indicators, if you look at post-traumatic stress again, a 4-fold increase in post-traumatic stress if a woman had the death, if someone close to her, in her family died as a result of the storm. So those people are still dealing with the trauma of, of this event much more. So, we know how important social support is, and that's one of our concerns with the family structure being so disrupted during Katrina, women coming back, and we know how important social support is to pregnant women and during the childbearing phase. So we wanted to look particularly at that. We had some questions that we asked from the demographics that were taken from the CDC PRAMS about social support. So if they answered no to any of these questions, no one to lend me $50, no one to help me if I'm sick in bed, no one to take me to the clinic, no one to talk to. The women who answered no to these questions obviously had significantly higher levels of depression and post-traumatic stress. All these measures were significantly higher. And you can look, and overall the support was an answer of no to 2 of them. So their risk for post-traumatic stress and depression went up much more if they lacked that social support. And this one went on to look at the same indicators with perceived stress, and perceived stress was significantly higher. And perceived stress was looking at more of a long-term picture over the past month. The only thing that was not significant was the pregnancy-related anxiety instrument, and we don't know for sure what was going on there other than the fact that maybe they're in prenatal care and their pregnancy may be that bright spot that if things are going well, they can deal with the lack of social support. They didn't worry more about their pregnancy, at least. And we have just begun to look at some of the mental health, besides mental health indicators, we've started to look at some of the health behaviors and other indicators of health. And just to kind of give you an overview of some of these that are coming up at this point, massage is always, we've done analysis a couple of times as we've gone along, and at first, the more women who said they had massage, you had a decrease in their depression. With this last analysis, it showed up with a decrease in stress, perceived stress. But we thought it was interesting, and in talking to the women, it's not a professional massage for the most part. Occasionally it is, but it's usually someone in their family who gives them back massages. So you know that's really a social support indicator, probably more than a muscle relaxant indicator. But they have someone who cares enough about them. It could be their sister, their brother, of course their partner, or their mother. When we ask about it, we get a long range of people. But anyway, we know that there are some things that other interventions that we might can look at down the road that would be significant. Yoga was also another one that showed a decrease in depression scores. Of course, you can see smoking, as in most mental health issues, smoking indicates poor mental health across the board, as well as drug use. People who use drugs are more likely to be depressed and have post-traumatic stress. People who ate well did pretty well, too. So there's some, you know, some indicators here. If we can keep people healthier, then we might can decrease the pregnancy, depression, and post-traumatic stress. We also looked at coping styles, beginning to look at that, and these were some negative coping styles associated with more depression, more anxiety, and more stress, that being denial, venting, disengagement, or self-blame, which just indicates they have poor problem-solving ability, most likely, too, which may be contributing to their being able to get out of their depression, post-traumatic stress. So our conclusions is obviously high disaster exposure and low social support are associated with mental health problems during pregnancy, and these women remain at risk for years. We're 6 years out, and we still have a group of women who are at risk for these poor mental health indicators. And we know that coping styles, you know, probably indicate some chronic long-term issues with not being able to be good problem solvers. So our recommendations at this point is we need women to be connected, and we also need women to be identified. And we're thinking that some of these women are not in New Orleans, they're all over the United States. And we don't know how much we do intake when we do our first prenatal intake. Do we ask if the woman's been exposed to a disaster or not? So we need to kind of, that's the key thing is to identify that these are women who have had a past disaster exposure. And we also want to assess, and hopefully we're already doing that in prenatal care, women with low social support, because the two things together make these women much more at risk. And of course we need the professional social services and the health services then to offer treatment. And we kind of see that the need is for this connected prenatal care, whether it be centered pregnancy with a midwife, doula support, Healthy Start programs, any public health programs that would bring women together with their healthcare providers and make them get more individualized attention. Okay, thank you.